Picture this. You're in the left seat of a Cessna 185. You're climbing out of Salmon, Idaho. The Salmon River is a silver ribbon 1,000 feet below you, and in every direction, as far as you can see, as far as you can possibly see, there are mountains, ridgelines stacked on top of ridgelines like waves frozen in stone. No roads, no highways, no power lines, nothing. Just you and the airplane and several million acres of the most spectacular and unforgiving terrain in the lower 48 states. And somewhere ahead of you, carved into a flat mountain meadow at roughly 5,000 feet, is a dirt airstrip that you can only reach by air or by foot. A strip where elk outnumber people most days of the year. A strip where Forest Service rangers spend their summers dropped in by bush plane-like supplies to a forward operating base. A strip that has been the launching point for some of the greatest backcountry adventures in American aviation history. I'm Ramp. You're listening to Ramp Check on Radio Hangar. And today I'm taking you to Chamberlain Basin. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument, commercial, all the way up. Mark the milestones that matter. Every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Okay, let me set the stage. Because if you haven't spent time flying over central Idaho, you cannot fully appreciate what we are talking about here. The Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness, say that name out loud, River of No Return. That is not marketing copy, that is not some tourism board trying to be dramatic. That is what early settlers actually called the Salmon River Canyon, because it is so deep and so swift and so relentless that once you went in by boat, you were not coming back upstream. You were committed, you were going all the way through.
Congress designated 2.3 million acres as the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness in 1980, named after Idaho Senator Frank Church. And here is the number I want you to sit with. 2.3 million acres. That is the largest designated wilderness area in the contiguous United States. No roads in, no motorized vehicles allowed on the ground, no development. The only way to reach most of it is to walk in, which takes days, or to fly in, which takes about an hour from Salmon or McCall. And here is the thing that makes this place so extraordinary for the aviation community. The airstrips were already there before the wilderness designation. The Forest Service had been operating backcountry strips in the Frank Church region for decades before Congress drew those boundaries in 1980. When the Wilderness Bill was written, those strips were specifically grandfathered in. The planes could stay, the roads could not. That decision created something that exists almost nowhere else in American wilderness management. A wilderness area where the airplane is not just permitted, but essential. Where bush pilots are part of the ecological and cultural fabric of the place. Where the Cessna 185 and the Super Cub and the Kit Fox are the pack mules and the delivery trucks and the lifelines for everyone who works and lives and plays out here. Chamberlain Basin sits right in the middle of all of it. And I want to take you there right now to understand Chamberlain. You have to understand its geography. The basin itself is a wide, flat-bottomed valley at roughly 5,000 feet above sea level. On paper, 5,000 feet sounds manageable, and it is on a cold morning in May, but the surrounding ridgelands climb to 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 feet. You are landing in a bowl. A beautiful, spectacular bowl, but a bowl. And the terrain that surrounds you is not optional scenery. It is a factor you are actively managing from the moment you descend into the basin until the moment you clear the ridge on departure. The runway is approximately 2,600 feet of packed dirt. On a cool morning with a lightly loaded Super Cub that is comfortable, on a hot afternoon in August when the density altitude is climbing toward 8,000 or 9,000 feet. You're doing math, serious math, the kind of math that backcountry pilots work through at their kitchen table before they ever leave home. Performance numbers at density altitude, actual takeoff roll, actual climb rate, not the sea level standard day numbers from the handbook, the real numbers, because the mountain will hold you to the real numbers. The runway surface is maintained by the United States Forest Service, and I say maintained, with genuine appreciation for what maintenance means in a wilderness area, with no roads and no heavy equipment access. It gets attention, it is kept serviceable. But you are going to see ruts. You're going to see tire tracks from previous traffic. You're going to see exactly where the elk have been crossing the runway. And that is not hypothetical. That is not me being dramatic. Wildlife on backcountry strips is a standard planning consideration. The procedure is to do a low pass first. Not because some instructor told you to do a low pass, because the alternative is a collision with a 700-pound animal that has absolutely no interest in clearing the runway for you. The elk wins that encounter every single time. So you do the low pass, you assess the strip, and if the strip is clear, you set up and land. Experienced backcountry pilots will tell you that Chamberlain is actually one of the more forgiving strips in the entire Frank Church network, and I want you to really hear that. The more forgiving one. That is simultaneously reassuring and clarifying, because what it tells you is that this type of flying demands a level of skill, preparation, and situational awareness that is qualitatively different from what most general aviation pilots encounter day to day. The approach at Chamberlain requires threading through terrain, reading the winds in real time, managing your energy carefully coming down into the basin. Mountain winds are not what the forecast says they are. Mechanical turbulence off the ridgelines, drainage winds in the evening as cooler air flows down the creek drainages, thermal activity over the open meadows in the afternoon, and conditions that can change in minutes. Every landing at Chamberlain is a reminder that backcountry flying demands your full attention. It keeps you sharp, it keeps you honest. So who actually comes out here? Let me tell you about the people you'll meet at Chamberlain Basin. The first group is the United States Forest Service Rangers who staff the Chamberlain Guard Station through the summer. They fly in at the start of their rotation in planes loaded with food, equipment, personal gear, tools, whatever will fit. They spend weeks out there maintaining wilderness trails, monitoring wildlife populations, managing the area. When they need resupply, the plane comes back. When there's a medical emergency, the plane comes back. For these rangers, the airplane isn't a recreational amenity. It is the infrastructure. I spoke with a Forest Service employee who spent 3 seasons stationed at Chamberlain. She described arriving at the station for the first time. The plane that drops you off disappears over the ridge, and the engine sound fades, and then there is nothing. No cars, no machinery, no neighbor's lawnmower, no distant highway hum. Just the wind moving through the pines and the creek down in the draw. She told me it takes most people 3 or 4 days to truly decompress into that silence, and then you stop wanting to leave. The second major group at Chamberlain is the hunting community. Idaho has some of the premier elk hunting in North America, and the Frank Church Wilderness is at the center of it. Outfitters have operated out of Chamberlain Basin for generations. They fly in hunters from across the country through September and October, Cessna 180s stacked with saddles and camp gear and rifle cases, and after a successful hunt you fly that load back out, heavier than when you came in, which is again where the performance math really matters. The partnership between backcountry aviation and the hunting community in Idaho is one of the most interesting relationships in all of general aviation. These are people who need the airplane to be reliable. They are not flying for recreation, although many of them have come to love the flying itself. They are flying because there is literally no other way to access these mountains in the time frame that matters. That dependence creates a type of pilot I have enormous respect for. Practical, resourceful, rigorous about maintenance, uncompromising about airworthiness. These are not pilots who defer squawks, and then there is the third group, the adventure pilots, the people who showed up at an EAA chapter meeting, heard someone talk about Idaho backcountry flying, and went home and immediately started researching mountain flying courses, started looking at STOL conversion kits, started asking what tundra tires cost. That community has been growing every year, and the established Idaho backcountry community has done genuinely thoughtful work to welcome newcomers while being completely honest about what the environment demands organizations like the Idaho Aviation Association and the Recreational Aviation Foundation have worked for decades on strip preservation, public land access, pilot education, and advocacy. They are a significant reason why many of these strips still exist and remain open. When funding gets cut and maintenance falls behind, it is volunteers from these organizations who show up with hand tools and grubbing hoes to keep the strips flyable. That work matters. It matters enormously. Now, here is something the guidebooks don't fully convey. There are unwritten rules in Idaho backcountry flying. A code. And if you're new to this world, you need to understand them before you go. The first rule is, get the right training. Not, I feel pretty good about my piloting skills. Not, I have 400 hours, I'll figure it out. Mountain flying requires dedicated instruction from someone who actually knows these specific environments. There are excellent mountain flying courses available in Idaho and Montana. The Idaho Aviation Association can point you toward experienced instructors in Salmon and McCall and Boise. The training exists. Use it. The second rule is, know your airplane's actual performance, not the book numbers. The handbook performance figures are from sea level standard day. At 5,000 feet on a hot afternoon, those numbers mean nothing. You need to know your airplane's real performance at real density altitude, at your actual weight on the day you're flying. Work those numbers, know them cold before you ever leave the flatlands. The third rule is, be a steward. These strips exist because people before you fought for them. When you land at Chamberlain, you pick up any trash you see, you report maintenance issues to the Forest Service, you don't abuse the surface. The Recreational Aviation Foundation organizes volunteer work days at backcountry strips across the western states, and the Idaho strips are some of the most active. Go to one, pick up a tool, earn your place out here. Okay. But I want to tell you about what it actually feels like to be there, because that is the real story. You land at Chamberlain, you taxi clear and shut down, the propeller stops spinning, and in the silence that follows, you step out onto this dirt and grass strip, and you look around at the ridgelines and the open meadows and the big sky overhead, and something happens to you, something shifts. You're in one of the most remote places in the contiguous United States, genuinely remote. Not 45 minutes from a suburb remote, not a dirt road and a gate remote, air access or a multi-day hike remote. And you got here in a small airplane that you flew yourself. That combination of wilderness and aviation does something to a person that I cannot fully describe in a radio segment. You have to go feel it yourself. The Chamberlain Basin meadows spread wide in the summer. There is a creek. There are wildflowers in August that look almost too vivid to be real. The old guard station buildings sit back from the runway, log construction, weathered, and functional and completely at home in this setting. In the morning, the light comes over the eastern ridge at an angle that makes everything glow. The air is thin and dry and smells like sage and spruce resin. There are no contrails overhead. Morning departures are not just advice out here. They are the operating principle. Density altitude climbs as the day heats up. The standard guidance from experienced Frank Church pilots is to be wheels up before noon, and the veterans push that earlier. The mountain winds tend to be calmer in the morning. The thermals over the meadows haven't developed. The smart move is to load the plane the evening before. Sleep under Idaho stars depart at first light about the airplanes. Let's talk airplanes for a minute, because in this environment the airplane is not just a tool, it is a very specific tool, matched to a very specific job. The Piper Super Cub, the PA-18. This airplane is so well matched to backcountry flying that it almost seems unfair to everything else. Light, tough, genuine short-field performance, excellent slow-flight characteristics, and that high-wing tandem configuration gives you the kind of visibility you actually need when you're threading through terrain. Idaho backcountry operators have been flying Super Cubs since the 1950s, and they are not switching any time soon. Modified Super Cubs are their own world. Bigger engines, stall conversion kits, extended leading-edge slats, vortex generators along the wing, oversized Tundra tires that look like they belong on a farm tractor. The pilots who build and operate these machines are among the most mechanically literate aviators in all of general aviation. They have to be. There is no FBO at Chamberlain Basin. There is no mechanic on call. You and your airplane are responsible for getting yourselves home. The Cessna 180 and 185 are the pack mules of the Frank Church network, more useful load than the Super Cub, more room for gear and cargo, and the 185 with its Continental engine has the muscle to haul a meaningful load in and out of high-altitude short strips. These are the airplanes carrying elk quarters and propane tanks and 5-gallon water jugs and bags of concrete for trail work. Working airplanes, that's what they are. More recently, you're seeing a new generation of purpose-built backcountry aircraft showing up at strips like Chamberlain, the Cub Crafters Carbon Cub line, the Kit Fox modern composite construction, more efficient engines, advanced GPS navigation, short-field performance that would have seemed impossible to the original bush pilots of the 1930s and 40s. But the mission is identical to what it was when those first pilots dropped into these valleys. Find the strip. Read the conditions, land safely, get back out. The pilots who have been flying the Frank Church for 20 and 30 years will tell you the same thing when you ask what keeps drawing them back. It is not the hunting, though the hunting is extraordinary. It is not the fishing, though the fishing in those mountain creeks is something special. It is the airplane. It is the fact that the airplane is what makes this place accessible. That in this specific corner of America aviation is not a hobby. It is the key. The only key. And walking through that door, landing at Chamberlain Basin, or Big Creek, or Moose Creek, changes something in you in a way that is hard to put back.
Chamberlain Basin will be there next summer. The wilderness will be there, the elk will be crossing the runway in the morning light, and the Forest Service rangers will be flying in for their summer rotations, and somewhere right now a pilot is sitting at her kitchen table with a sectional chart, tracing the Salmon River drainage with her finger, wondering if she's ready to make the trip. Get the training, get current, call the Idaho Aviation Association and ask who teaches mountain flying in that area. The backcountry community wants to share this world with you. They will help you get ready. And when you finally drop into Chamberlain Basin for the first time and the engine goes quiet, and you're standing on that dirt strip with 2.3 million acres of wilderness around you, you will understand everything. My thanks to the Idaho Aviation Association, the Recreational Aviation Foundation, and the United States Forest Service for their work documenting and preserving these incredible strips. More at radiohanger.com. I'm Ramp. Fly it like you mean it.